Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It stands on the brink of destruction as the vast realm called the Shadow Deep slowly swallows everything in its path. As armies fight to contain the tide of evil creatures teeming out of the black clouds, the kingdom's best soldiers, the Rangers, must venture deep into the shadows to gather information, rescue prisoners, and ambush enemy supply lines. It is a desperate fight against overwhelming odds, but every little victory brings another day of hope.
What's that from?
So that is the setting for Rangers of Shadow Deep. Rangers of Shadow Deep is either solo or cooperative miniatures game by the creator of Frostgrave.
Right. You've talked about this before.
Right. So that was previously only available as a PDF.
Okay.
And now Modiphius is going to produce a deluxe edition of the book. It's going to have additional art and then also refined mechanics and then additional mechanics that are going to allow different types of play. So for example, they're adding challenge levels to all the scenarios. As you add cooperative players, you can make the scenarios more difficult.
Okay. Okay.
And so solo play is kind of the default setting for everything, but you can add three or four Rangers and then change the difficulty to make it a bit more of a challenge. So Joe McCullough, the creator of Frostgrave, and now the creator of Rangers of Shadow Deep, said, with the help of Modiphius, it is wonderful to bring this improved edition of the game to a wider audience. And I'm looking forward to seeing many more people join the ranks of the Rangers. And I think they're probably doing this because it didn't get as much attention as Frostgrave. I think.
Oh, really?
Frostgrave was very popular because it's, you know, it's miniatures agnostic. Mm-hmm. It's just a rule set. And you can use, we were using the Lego mini.
Yeah, we were. Yeah.
I think this is a system that they put a lot of time into, and it didn't catch on the same way that Frostgrave did.
Well, do you think that's because, in speculation here, this game wasn't through Osprey Games?
It just didn't get, it just didn't get the attention. Having Modiphius kind of do a deluxe version of it, so it's going to be a hardbound, nice edition. Yeah, so it's going to be updated rules, combines all of the character building elements first presented in Temple of Madness, which I think is the first setting.
Expansion, right, okay.
And it also includes dozens of new pieces of art by Barrett Stanley. There's just going to be small tweaks and improvements to the rules, but of course, the biggest change is the challenge levels.
Right.
Yeah, so previously this was only available on DriveThruRPG.
Oh, I guess only as a PDF.
Right.
I wonder if that had anything to do with it.
That could have been, because I think that both Gaslands and Frostgrave, because they were books, it made me want to take a look at them a little more seriously. When something is only a PDF, for some reason, I just don't take it as seriously. And just because this is going to be a lot of pages to print, unless you're going to be looking at it on a tablet. But the idea of a solo miniatures game, it was very interesting. And the story seems pretty good. I've watched a few people play through the opening scenarios. Okay. It's good timing because the thing that's interesting about this for me is you have to come up with miniatures for all of these different scenarios and settings, and there's nobody doing licensed anything. And so a 3D printer
makes
that a lot easier. So you just buy one spider model and print it six times, and you get your six giant spiders that you need for the scenario. So that'll help things be a lot easier to set up because there are very distinctive things you need. You'll need a hut, and you'll need this, and you'll need trees here, and because you're a ranger and it's a lot of forest encounters and things.
Is the game playable without those miniatures? I mean, obviously they're going to enhance the experience, but I mean, could you just use tokens?
I'm sure you could. Because as long as it's something that you could measure from. And so if you used a standard inch circle base and you could still do the measurement and everything, I'm not sure as far as height, if the rules for visibility and line of sight, I'm not sure. I'm sure you could. And maybe that's what some people had done, but the whole setting and experience I think would be really fun. So I'm really excited about this. And I think the timing is good as far as seeing a new version of the rules in a nice kind of complete volume. Right. So just the idea of solo. And I wonder if that is the thing that just didn't really click, because with Frostgrave, you can get multiple people excited and everybody can have their bands. And if it's just solo, I don't think people will really want to do battle reports or do recordings of sessions if it's just them talking.
Well, you say that, but aren't there a fair number of video game kind of playthroughs where it's just, this seems like the same thing, just in, miniature war game or TTRPG format, which it seems like it could be popular, but maybe the appeal of role-playing game actual plays are listening to the interactions between people.
Especially for live streams, for streaming for video games, it's more of a hang. People are they're playing games and they can kind of multitask.
Right.
And I think with a miniatures game, you're going to kind of be focused on this. If someone's asking you a question, you're like, okay, wait, where was I? Who was attacking? Oh, okay, wait. Yeah, it might not work quite as well. I mean, if you had a group of people and someone was kind of paying attention to chat or whatever, I think that could be a fun way to do it, because when it's cooperative, it's not so intense. Someone is always paying attention to turn order and what's going on. Role-playing sessions can tolerate live streaming kind of being invaded by people asking questions, but I'm not sure miniatures games will work as well. So, and maybe people are reluctant to do it and also reluctant to watch it because it spoils it. You know, it's a story.
But yeah, the spoilers for watching them. But I guess for this kind of, you know, miniatures game, okay, failed that scenario or think I could do it better. What are other people doing from this scenario? Maybe spoiling it is a factor in why it wasn't as popular or it might not be as popular.
Right. Yeah. So do you think this reprinting, this kind of deluxe edition is going to help the popularity?
I have no idea. I am surprised that the first edition was not as popular as they wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. Maybe, like you said, the PDF only kind of hurt it as getting into itch.io. You know, PDFs are, for me, more appealing because they're not easy to produce, but they're portable. I also still do fight against the feeling that this is worth less because it's not a physical product. So maybe, as you said, there not being a physical book for this Rangers game is what hurt it.
Mm. It's a difficult balance when you're producing a PDF to make it printer friendly, looking good on a tablet, because there's so many things that if they're really gorgeously produced and they've got like dark background and light text, it's like, I'm never going to print that. Yeah.
Having printed off a bunch of pages for the upcoming Alien game, again, I feel your pain. I'm just like, this looks fantastic. It's a pain in the butt to print. And if it was on my home printer, I would never do it.
Right. You got to have a good job with a big set of copiers.
Yeah. And enough plausible deniability to like, what's this Alien file? In the printer queue. I have no idea. I'm sorry as I like collect these 400 pages. Yeah.
Nice news. And we may have a review copy of the PDF for that to take a look at. So we'll give you our thoughts as soon as we have that.
As someone who's interested in solo role-playing games, I'm interested in seeing what this looks like.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to Frostgrave where there's RPG elements where you're leveling up basically your band of rangers and kind of deciding who you're taking with you and solving a mystery. Like they were saying, you're actually fighting back this evil. So you progress at certain points in the campaign.
Yeah, I'd want to see how kind of the campaign plays out or if the choices you make during the game affect later scenarios and stuff like that. Because if they don't, they kind of feel meaningless, which I think defeats the purpose of campaign play.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very true. Since the last time we talked about it, so that night and then last night, I was able to play the high school RPG. Twice. Yeah, so there are two sessions of that. Everyone that's in that entire workshop was able to experience it, and some more interested than others. I think the first
that's night, a polite way of saying it didn't go over well with some people.
First night introduction went well because it was such a mystery. It's like, what is this?
All right, okay.
Yeah, for a lot of the players. And then it was a mixed group the next time, and so some had played, some had not. So there were some people very excited, and others are like, okay.
Oh, this again. Yeah, oh, okay.
Right. But it was good. The real simple mechanics worked well. It was easy to explain, and it was easy to explain just while playing it, while doing it. So some of the fun things that happened is I kept track of failed and success rolls against certain NPCs, and so ultimately the prom queen ended up becoming the bully, and just kind of every time someone was charming or successful in a social role, she became outraged. Improvised a really nice volleyball mechanic for the PE class.
Okay.
So I just had all the students. So it's just failing or passing physical roles. So some of the very clumsy students actually did surprisingly well. And it ended up being a very lopsided game, but in a very funny, appropriate way. Yeah, so that went well. And I'm not sure. I think it'd probably be worth putting together, if this was something that somebody was going to present, it might be worth putting together like a GM section as well. Like how this is so stripped down, like how you're, what you're actually, the mindset for actually what you're doing and whether this is a social interaction or a mental interaction or a physical interaction and think about how that stacks up. But it's a good way to kind of get some gamification into role play in ESL.
That's awesome. For games that are fairly rules light, having those GM sections kind of explaining not necessarily how to run the game, but kind of, I guess, the ideas behind running the game, especially that the creator had intended and like how you would handle certain things, I think does help a lot, especially for games that have very few or even one kind of resolution mechanic. Mm-hmm. And like you said, for physical, mental, social things in your high school RPG game, it all sounds like they got resolved the same way. So advice or points on how to make them feel different probably would be a good thing to include in the GM section.
Right. If there's any desire for anybody to see that, just give us a comment and I'll post that somewhere. But it's just a very stripped down D20 kind of fun way to just basically have a narrative kind of role play. Coming up, this will be a little Christmas event, and hopefully we can live stream this. We're going to do a session of War Room. So World War II.
Oh, that massive, huge box that's going to take up like, what, 5 tables out.
I got to figure out how I'm going to set up cameras for this, because I'm definitely going to need something overhead the whole time.
And it's going to have to be real far away to capture the whole board, isn't it?
So we'll see. But hopefully if you want to see World War II, I think like starting in like 1941, replayed, you can Enjoy that.
How closely do you think it follows the actual World War? Because I owned, but never played, Axis and Allies. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like the, I understand historical games, like the setup was pretty much accurate for the time. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like the game would play out the first couple turns. The optimal thing to do for the different countries were what actually happened. Mm. And I understand why you would do that from like a historical recreationist angle. But as like a game, I wondered how fun that would be. Like if you do try and do something different, you're probably going to be at a disadvantage. So do you think War Room would have the same issue?
I'm curious. Yeah, because this is kind of a refinement of that original idea. It's the original creator of Axis and Allies. So if, you know, Larry Harris kind of is taking into account the years and years of basically playtesting of that system, and you know, he's got a lot of experience with kind of historical recreation. And I think that's probably the challenge. I mean, that's why we have fantasy role play that we have now, because people just got maybe frustrated with historical recreation. And I don't know. I think that's got to be a balance. And it probably depends on the players as well, because I'm sure there's people that want to stick very strictly to let's just see how this plays out if everything happened exactly as it did historically. Right. Or if we want to shake things up and have a very strange approach, like take, you know, a radical approach to the Eastern Front, you know, how Russia was going to deal with Germany or whatever. If you did something very random and odd to kind of see, well, what would happen if?
Right.
And I think a mix of those kinds of players might not be a very satisfying
game. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. Why are you doing that? That's not what that country did.
Right. Because you have the starting resources. Like, you know, everything is set basically historically. The types of troops you had, the resources you had, and everything has to be historically accurate. But then what you do with that afterwards, I think, is maybe open to what the players want to do. So, yeah, it'll be fun to see.
And how long do you expect it to take?
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to give it, we're going to come in as early as possible. So it's supposed to be 2 hours per player. So,
Right. I believe that. Yeah, sure.
So we'll see. That game might just have to stay set up somewhere.
Like that's what I've not heard people play this game because obviously it's new. But yeah, I've heard stories of, you know, Axis and Allies games or similar games where you just leave that thing set up for weeks on end because no one can get together to play it and no one has the amount of time to invest into it. Those strike me as games for people who do not have kids or whose kids are now adult.
Mm, right. Yeah, I think with that many pieces, yeah, you can't, yeah, you couldn't possibly leave that alone with anybody interested in touching all those things. And also, War Room is it's all stackable token based, so there's no tempting little battleships or little soldiers that you might want to play with.
Pretty much anything is tempting at a certain age.
I guess they can all be swallowed, though.
Yes, they can. More importantly, they can all be chewed up. Yeah, right. So it's almost, which is worse, to have it be swallowed or to have it just be like chewed up and left there as a reminder that your game is now partially ruined.
So look forward to that. We'll try to, that'll be a Christmas event. So if you're stuck at your relatives, tune into the Idle Red Hands Twitch and see what we're up to.
Speaking of stuff that can be chewed up and spit out, I am now the proud owner of over 1,200 business cards.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, I ordered 500 copies each of my Hunger and Thirst games. Mm-hmm. And from what I can tell, they look fine. Like, I haven't opened up the packs, but I got maybe about like 150 to 200 extras which I guess was either overrun or they don't appear to be cut incorrectly or have any mistakes or anything like that.
Nice.
I haven't looked at them super closely because I am paranoid that there's going to be a very glaring and obvious typo somewhere on these cards. I haven't found one, and I'm not saying there is one, just that's the feeling I have.
Right.
Picked those up the other day, and I haven't updated the product pages on itch with the information. Shipping these things is going to be fairly minimal, so like the $3 price I think includes shipping as well. But I'm going to start shipping these out. I'm going to have to be fulfilling stuff by hand, so it might take a while. Mm-hmm. But I just said it's okay, $3, which gets you the PDF version, also gets you a card, and then each card after that was just like $1. So people who've done like $5 or $6 or whatever dollars are going to get multiple copies of the card.
Nice. Bring a couple of those in. I'd be curious to see how the final
they look pretty good.
Came out. Oh, nice.
Warning, or not warning, but they are Japanese size business cards, which are slightly larger than U.S. business cards. What, 91 by 55 millimeter or something like that, which is slightly bigger than the 2 by 3.5 that we normally have.
Right.
Not gigantically so, but yeah.
Nice.
First thing I've had professionally printed in the game, so it's kind of nerve-wracking. That's why I'm saying I'm expecting there to be a typo that I somehow missed.
That you now have 500.
Exactly. I'm also getting ready for tomorrow's Alien RPG game that we're going to do. We're doing the Hope's Last Day cinematic scenario from the back of the book. We're going to have, about like 4 players, 2 of which have played or run the game before and 2 that haven't, I believe. Mm-hmm. So what you said about the mixed game for your high school I'm kind of wondering what's going to, not wondering what's going to happen, but there's going to be a mix of exposure levels to the game.
Mm-mm.
I did, and I said this on Twitter, the adventure scenario presented in the book, That Hope's Last Day, is clearly stated as being sort of the third act of a three-act cinematic campaign. It's just kind of supposed to give you a taste of what cinematic play could be. Looking at the agendas for the characters, and I'm not going to spoil any of them, I feel that they jump to the end game too quickly. The way things are worded, like, yes, it would, if this was, if we'd played one or two other acts prior to this, okay, sure, these are our logical conclusions. And having watched the debriefing that we did and getting all people's different opinions on what the agendas felt like and whether they pushed them to do it or not, I kind of want these agendas to be a bit more vague at the beginning rather than, in my opinion, is kind of spilling stuff and pushing right towards that final resolution. So I don't know if I'm going to have time. Mm-hmm. They might just be horribly scrawled chicken scratches on pieces of paper. I'm going to try and come up with one more kind of act one agenda for each of the characters. That's sort of a logical extension, or I guess not prevention, a logical first step towards that agenda that's in the book to try and make things a bit more vague and stuff. I guess maybe spoiling a little bit, like we said with the, when you ran the Kronos game, Chariot of the Gods, the scenario says that players should be allowed to explore freely for a bit first before things start happening. And they say the same thing here. You're kind of encouraged to allow people or players and characters to explore the colony. I kind of feel the agendas presented are at odds with that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, not like, not irreconcilable, but just the agendas say do this thing, which severely, I feel, shortens the exploration time if you're following those agendas. Something that came up, I guess, during the debrief, I forget what they're called. The points you get for following the agendas, what are those called? Plot points, reward points, some kind of whatever points plot you get.
Yes,
those are connected to the player, not the scenario. So, maybe spoilers, but where John said they kind of felt the third agenda didn't matter because they wouldn't get rewarded for it, you will. Right. You're just going to get to use it at the next scenario you play, which may or may not happen, but there is kind of a reason. So, I'm going to see what happens when John starts with one extra plot point.
Nice, yeah.
At the beginning of the scenario.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's right. I did remember seeing that. I was wondering, I guess, you know, if you're playing a series of cinematic, I mean, that would be fun because it's like, yeah, I'm a totally different character, but I have this built-in advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm really curious to see how this goes.
I like how these are set up. They're the kind of overview locations events. The Kronos one was big, and you and I both ran into the same issue of kind of having to flip back and forth as as players explored various parts of the map, and there's a lot of kind of hold on reading a section. This might suffer from the same issue. However, since it's a much smaller scenario, there are much fewer locations. However, I don't know how you would avoid that problem, apart from memorizing stuff or having lots of sheets laid out so you could kind of quickly glance at stuff.
Right.
I think I'm going to have to say right up front, this seems like a pretty deadly scenario. I mean, not that the one on the Kronos wasn't.
Right.
I'm just saying, spoilers, this one actually involves xenomorphs, and we all know what happens when you shoot one of them things.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's going to have a whole different table of wackiness. Yep. Yeah, because there was no acid for blood last
time.
No,
there was no acid for blood in the one we played. There was that real nasty, like, virus stuff that no one in either the game you ran or the game I ran got exposed to.
Yeah, right. So nobody was rolling against virulence. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. Again, I think the scenario is really well presented. The characters are interesting. The agendas are decent, but as I said, kind of jumped to the action a little too quickly for my taste. So I know I kind of have this pet peeve about playing the game as intended first. I'm not going to do that here.
So there'll be another interesting debriefing where we discuss, was that the correct
Wow, that thing? Sucked. Those act one agendas were terrible. Who wrote those? Yeah.
Well, something that came back to Kickstarter after a first unsuccessful campaign was Caserta. So Caserta is a 5e setting done by the Italian company Isola Ilion Edizioni.
Yeah, say that five times fast. Yeah.
It's for 5e and it's going to be published in both English and Italian.
Okay, that's cool.
And we talked about this before. So all the basic character classes and races are going to be included in the setting, but they're also introducing, and some of these are based on stretch goals, but they're also introducing new classes, new races, and of course, new spells. Because basically your character wakes up in this Realm of the Dead.
Oh, and interesting.
So, okay. Yeah, so the setting is, so it's a world of danger and horror. The characters face chaos, insanity, and damnation, as well as dangerous enemies and frightening monsters. The netherworld realms of Kasarta are ruled by unholy and terrified beings and inhabited by the souls of the dead. So I guess basically this would be if your characters had all died in a campaign that was like a total party kill and they woke up in this other world. Sounds very, very interesting. And they are already funded this time.
Okay, cool.
So they set a lower threshold and probably backed off on kind of the gorgeousness of what they wanted originally to print everything at. So it's a core book, a map pack, a DM screen. And I think they're doing things like prints of some of the art and like t-shirts.
Okay.
But not going completely all out. And they're already funded. So this will happen. And there's, of course, a digital version and then a print version that includes the digital as well. Thing, I like the art and I thought it was an inspiring setting. So it's definitely worth taking a look at that and giving these guys some attention. So I think it's fun stuff. And again, more 5e.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we discussed before with, I guess, what the Filipino mythology inspired 5e setting, you said this is a good way to kind of show the differences that have been introduced mechanically based on the setting. Because 5e kind of uses a baseline. So you can say, oh, this is where things are different based on the setting. Or this is what they did to kind of make it feel like you're undead, whatever, with this game. So while 5e isn't my favorite game system, it is the most popular. And so I can't fault people for using it. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it allows you to kind of easily see what's different if you're already familiar with the game.
Right. Yeah. So we'll put a link to that. And there's a few more weeks left on this campaign. Backing that will start to unlock more of their intended changes, the character classes and spells and additional settings. So yeah, take a look at that. So that's Kasarta on Kickstarter.
Point of advice, if you do decide to play this, just start everybody like in the Realm of the Dead rather than doing a first session that must end with a total party kill, because that would be a waste of a first session.
Right.
Just say, no, we're starting this game. Make characters that are already dead, because you're starting that, instead of saying, make characters and then killing them. Yeah. Because
I didn't think of that. That would be a very funny way to go. Yeah. Just like
you say that now. You say that now. Just with like with all any number of other scenarios where the GM goes, oh, that's going to be real fun. And then only after playing it do they go, oh, the foregone conclusion of forcing the players and characters to be here. Yeah, I see how that's not fun. Yeah.
Right. You spent all this time, specking out your character, and oh yeah, you're dead. So re-roll in this.
Lose
realm.
All your stuff. Yeah.
You can change your race if you'd like. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as ever, as where I constantly flog my games. And I think thanks to someone who did a live playthrough of both Hunger and Thirst, which I thought was incredibly brave, given the subject matter and possible personal stuff that can game get into. I think the tagline for my games are going to be games that make you blush.
Nice. Yeah. I can see that logo already.
Yeah, really. What would that logo be? Anyway, that's Hivemind. HYVEMYND. Hivemind across pretty much every social media site. How about you?
And I do a weekly live stream of my single panel gag cartoon. So if you go to abusecartoons.com, that's the homepage. And then both on YouTube and Twitch, you can find me at Abuse Cartoons. Twitter, you can follow the cartoon at Abuse Cartoons. And the archive is on gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com, on Twitter at Idle Red Hands, and Instagram and all that good stuff. And if you'd like to support the podcast and get more involved, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands, where you can see the full debrief of that alien campaign that we did, the first cinematic starter, and possibly another.
Ooh, yeah. I was going to say, the Patreon is the only place to see that full hour and 20 minutes. Debriefing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. If you'd like to see everyone's reactions and opinions to what happened in those four sessions of that one shot.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Later, mortals.